Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. I'm very happy now to welcome back to the show Brian Shields. He's executive director of Amigos Bravos, and Michael Jensen, who is also with Amigos Bravos and has been on this show a number of times. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks a lot. It's always nice to be here.
So Amigos Bravos is an organization here in northern New Mexico that is all about water quality. What does the organization do? What's its mission?
Well, Amigos Bravos got started in 1988, so we've been around for 23 years. Our mission really started at first in protecting the Rio Grande watershed. And over the years, we've actually developed into a mission that protects all of the rivers in New Mexico. And our focus is really to ensure that the rivers run healthy and that there's a cultural connection that's maintained between the rivers and the communities that depend on them. So we have very much of an environmental justice bent to our work. We're very much involved with making sure that environmental justice and social justice go hand in hand.
In order for water quality to be maintained, it is imperative that the rules and laws of our society and of our state are conducive to that. And so every legislative session, we have yet another conversation about water and water quality. Do you want to give us a little rundown of what happened this past legislative session?
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting legislative session just because the focus was so much on trying to figure out what the new administration was going to do and how they were positioning themselves. So the environmental stuff really kind of took a little bit of a back seat compared to other legislative sessions, but there were huge amounts of attacks that were put forth on environmental regulations and maintaining the safeguards that we have right now. There's a lot of bills that were introduced to do away with those safeguards. What happened was, with this legislative session, that because the last election there was so, the legislature became much more evenly split between the Republicans and Democrats, we ended up with key environmental committees in the House, especially the House Energy and Natural Resources Committee, that was evenly split between Democrats and Republicans. So any bill that was controversial that would come up and end up in that committee would end up with a 6-6 vote, where it would be split down the middle and therefore the legislation wouldn't move forward. Well, that was good in terms of killing the bad bills, but it also meant that we couldn't really move a proactive agenda, certainly not a progressive proactive agenda in the legislature.
And by progressive proactive agenda, you basically mean keeping the environment as non-toxic as possible. Is that correct? Exactly.
Yeah. So there were a couple of really bad bills that were introduced for us, because we deal with water quality, trying to really gut the Water Quality Control Commission. One was introduced in the House by Andy Nunez, and the other one was introduced in the Senate by Phil Griego. And both of those bills basically tried to do away with the authority of the Water Quality Control Commission to develop safeguards and hand that authority over to the heads of different agencies. And one of the things that was really problematic was that it was sort of a bill that really allowed the wolf to take care of the hen house. Because what it did is the dairy industry would, according to this bill, be regulated by the Department of Agriculture instead of the Environment Department. So you get a feel for what would happen. The Department of Agriculture is there to promote the dairy industry, and yet they would have to be regulating the dairy industry at the same time to protect the environment. So it was a terrible bill.
And as we talked about with you, Michael Jensen, the last time you were on the air, the dairy industry, which sounds very nice, like Bessie the cow romping around in the fields, is actually a tremendous source of very concentrated toxic pollution that affects water supply.
Right. I mean, there are some small dairies in New Mexico that, you know, have cows out in the pasture and look like, you know, what, you know, we think a nice dairy looks like and what shows up in the billboards that you see sometimes. But the truth is that, you know, New Mexico has the highest number of dairy cows per operation of any state in the country. And so most of the dairies are these very large industrial scale, what are called concentrated animal feeding operations, where there's just bare dirt that's just been trampled in by all these cattle who also trample in their manure and they go into what are called milking parlors. They're just, you know, big, huge concrete-lined buildings where they file them in, strap them up to the machines, pump them out, you know, and just cycle them through two or three times a day. You know, so, yeah, it's a really big problem because, you know, one cow can produce anywhere from 15 to 18 gallons of manure a day. And when you've got 2,000 or 3,000 of them doing that every day of the year, that's a lot of stuff.
A lot of manure.
And, you know, there's runoff and it gets put into lagoons and there's issues with leaking from the lagoons because they're not maintained or not lined. So, yeah.
So back to the session, mm-hmm. There was, as you were saying, Brian Shields, not a lot of proactive legislation could get passed.
No, we did have one bill that got passed that was kind of interesting for us because we're all about kind of reducing the waste stream. And there was a bill that was passed that would get the dental amalgam collected so that those toxics wouldn't go into the waste stream.
The mercury-silver alloys.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a good positive move. I mean, we hope that at some point, you know, we can get more of that kind of legislation dealing with pharmaceuticals and other things. But that was the... that was the one that I thought, you know, that was good. The problematic thing that did happen at the legislature that did go through is the new budget. The new budget, in terms of the Environment Department, reduces the budget of the Environment Department by 19%. Now, that's huge. And we're going to be feeling those impacts. And those impacts are most likely going to come in the form of enforcement of safeguards and, you know, field offices are probably going to be cut. We don't know exactly what's going to happen, but that's in conversations we've had with the Environment Department, that seems to be sort of the direction that the Environment Department is going to take.
The Environment Department is the New Mexico version of the Environmental Protection Agency, essentially. And when you are, as we are in now, an environment unfriendly and supposedly business friendly environment, how do its employees, most of whom are carryovers from the last administration, how do they do their jobs?
Well, it's not even that they're, you know, carryovers from the last administration. A lot of these people are career employees of the Environment Department, so they're not appointed. You know, they're civil servants. And there is, it seems, you know, sort of open hostility against these career employees trying to do their job, which is to, I mean, they don't make the rules and the regulations. Their job is to carry them out, you know, to issue the permits that are required, to make sure those permits are being adhered to. Go out and collect, you know, water and air quality samples and analyze them and see if there are problems, things like that. So they're just doing their job. And it seems pretty clear from what we've seen, say, coming out of the Small Business Task Force, that industry, through, you know, their connections to the Martinez administration, are actively looking for ways to, as they put it, mitigate this problem of career employees of the Environment Department doing their job?
This is a question that I have asked before, and I will ask it probably until my dying day, which is, why does business not want clean water?
That's a really good question. Or clean air, or any of those other things.
Well, I think, you know, basically we're talking about the bottom line, and what does the bottom line entail for everybody, and everybody has different values and different things that is the bottom line for them. And what I see is that the bottom line for business is the dollar, and that's what counts the most. And so it's not public safety. It's not so anything that they can get away with, where they don't have to be spending money on cleanup, on processing toxics or anything like that, is money that can go towards the profit line, and that's what it is. It's not that they hate clean water. Obviously, they depend on it a lot themselves. But it is a matter of what's good for business. I mean, that's the system that we live in.
But again, as we've talked about a number of times, what's good for business is not necessarily to have a polluted state. Industries are more drawn to clean states and so on. And it seems to me that there is a kind of culture that is calling itself conservative, although I'm not sure that it deserves that name because it's not clear what they're really conserving, that
no, it's myopic.
It's just yeah. Almost like got a chip on its shoulder about environmentalism in a general way, but isn't really looking at specifics.
Well, it's really hypocritical, because if you... I would guess that a large number of these, the lobbyists and the business associations, you know, the cattle growers and all that, and their members, probably have a political ideology that says that the government should do as little as possible, the government should get out of the way and let business do what business does best, which presumably, you know, is something that beneficial not just to the business but to the larger society. But what happens is that by gutting regulation or finding ways to block existing regulation from going into effect, like cutting the budget of the Environment Department, it falls to government to clean up the mess that eventually comes out from unregulated business activities. And so, even though they say government shouldn't do anything, by trying to get rid of government, they force government to spend way more money than it would have spent by keeping the pollution from happening in the first place.
So the ounce of prevention, you don't have the ounce of prevention, you have a ton of stuff that needs to be...
You have the pound of cure, and that pound gets paid by...
Taxpayers.
Yeah, it's externalized cost.
Right.
That's what it is. It becomes externalized cost. But, you know, I mean, if you look at any community that's really thriving, it's usually a pretty clean environment. And you look at communities, the low-income communities, it's usually pretty polluted in one way or another. I mean, you look at Cuesta, for instance, which is right next to, you know, Taos. Taos has... good clean climate and has been able to adjust and thrive in, you know, difficult times. Whereas Cuesta, with its really polluted from the mining industry, really has never come out of being totally dependent on the mining industry, because that's the only industry that will go in there, basically. You know, now they're trying to attract tourism, but it's going to require the cleanup of that mine before they can really do that.
We're talking to Brian Shields and Michael Jensen from Amigos Bravos. So let's talk about the state of our waters in New Mexico today. We are a desert state, essentially, although there's a lot of different climate zones within this state. But we're a relatively dry state with drinking water that comes from underground aquifers, that comes from rainwater, comes from the sky, comes from the ground, basically. How are our waters, our rivers, our aquifers doing?
Well, you know, we're entering a permanent drought is what, scientists are saying. I mean, we've already entered it, but I think it's part of the climate change. It's part of what's happening as a reaction to global warming. And so this year, of course, it's really right in our face because our watersheds are way, way below normal. And we can expect a really difficult summer, spring and summer. We can expect fires. We can expect, you know, very reduced production of crops, and it's going to be really tight and difficult. I think in terms of, you know, the water contamination issues, there are some issues that are really chronic. I mean, they've been around for a long time, and they're going to be with us for a while, and we've got to really get a handle on them. And primarily those are coming from the mining industry and from the nuclear industry. And when we look at, you know, Los Alamos and the pollution that's running off there, that's a major concern for us.
Tell us more about that. What kind of pollution do we have coming off of Los Alamos?
Well, Los Alamos, you know, during the Manhattan Project back in the 40s, of course, they were in a race to create the bomb, and so they were dumping materials, all these materials that they were testing out to create the bomb, explosives as well as radionuclides and other toxic chemicals, into the arroyos and the mesa up there on the Pajarito Plateau. And there are over, I don't know, 3,000 dump sites that are known, and some of those we don't know what's in them. The worst of them are really, you know, they're contributing a lot of PCBs and different chemicals that are mostly bound to sediment, and the sediment is slowly moving its way down the arroyos to the Rio Grande. Amigos Bravos joined in with a number of other groups, including Concerned Citizens for Nuclear Safety and others, to file a lawsuit against Los Alamos for its stormwater discharges back in 2008.
March of 2008.
And we actually were able to get a really good, strong permit in place that's going to require that Los Alamos clean up the 600 of the worst sites within 5 years. So we're very hopeful. If everything goes according to, you know, what it's written down on the paper, we should really be able to deal with that issue within the next 5 years, at least the worst part of that issue. And that'll be a huge victory for clean water.
Now, what kind of testing was done and who did it that determined that this stuff was coming off of the lab in the first place?
Well, that lab is being monitored up and down by Los Alamos, by the New Mexico Environment Department, you know, for years and years. And the data that we used all came from there,
from internal, Los Alamos
from
themselves.
Los Alamos themselves and from the Environment Department. I forget now, Michael, can you remember? I mean, the PCB levels up there were like 30,000 times what's considered safe for human health consumption.
The first test from one of these sites came out at 28,000 times over the standard protective of human health, and then they went back, and the next time it was up at 35 or 36, something like that. I mean, really, really high.
And PCBs are bad for you.
Yeah, there are a bunch of different kinds of polychlorinated biphenyls. That's what a PCB is, so that's why they're PCBs. There's 128 or 30 or something. And they're industrial chemicals used in a wide range of industrial processes.
So
they're all over the place.
And it's interesting because, I mean, when we associate Los Alamos more with plutonium and radioactive waste, PCBs, they're not radioactive waste, but they're also carcinogenic in a really bad way.
Right, they are. And they found them in soil at those really high levels. They found them in fish in the river, so there's now a do not eat fish advisory for the entire stretch of the Rio Grande from Abiquiu down through Albuquerque. although it looks like that maybe the Albuquerque PCBs have their own local sources, which is another, we can talk about that in a minute maybe. So that alone is a big issue.
Okay, so continuing with this question of what are the threats to water quality here in New Mexico?
Yeah, I think you have to, when you're talking about water quality, you also have to talk about water quantity, because that's going to really affect water quality. Obviously, if a river dries out, there's no water quality issue, but that becomes an issue unto itself. And what you're seeing with climate change is that we're going to have really a reduction in the amount of water in rivers. But the other thing that really concerns me, and it's one of the issues that Amigos Bravos is going to be spending some time thinking about and having some internal discussions about, is the whole concept of water conservation. And what does that mean, and how is it useful? I mean, when we look at water conservation and we look at Santa Fe, for instance, you know, you have a great effort to conserve water here. People are really conscious. They're really doing a great job of doing that. And yet a developer who conserves water is then able to build another house. And so it really isn't water conservation at that point. At least it's not water that's conserved for future use in terms of when there's a real crisis situation. There's no wiggle room left now. If we're conserving all of the water, you know, that we can, and we keep on developing, then when the drought really hits bad, there's nothing to take up the slack. And so I think that's something that we really need to figure out, how to develop good policy, a good way of approaching that.
Now, my understanding is that worldwide and statewide, the vast majority of the water that's used is used for agriculture. Is that not true?
That is true. That is absolutely true.
So when we put in a new toilet, that's all fine and good, and it's lower flow, but human domestic use is a tiny part. I mean, I was thinking if we use 10% residential of the water in the state, and I conserve 10%, and everybody else says, still 99, it's just 1%.
Yeah, that's true. I think in terms of the water that's used by agriculture, obviously agriculture is going to be under as much pressure as everybody else is. I mean, looking at ways to be more efficient, and in some areas that's really taken hold. I mean, people are really leveling their fields so that there's less and less water that they have to use, or they're using more drip irrigation and those kind of things. So there's no question that needs to be dealt with. But I think, agriculture is something that obviously we're all depend on. And increasingly more, I think, as the cost of transportation, the cost of food goes up, the more important it is to have local production.
And also, I mean, I was just at a forum this past weekend down in Albuquerque to look at what's called aquifer storage and recovery, putting water down into the deep aquifer and then taking it out again later when you need it, which is done primarily to avoid losing water to evaporation if it's stored in reservoirs, for example. But a local dairy operator, who's also an ally of Amigos Bravos on some issues, so we actually can get along if we want to. It doesn't have to be a war.
Right.
She and I were talking this, we both presented at the forum, but she and I were talking, afterwards, and she, made the point that it's very difficult to compare agricultural use of water to urban use of water, because agriculture is a sort of a raw, resource use of water, and urban areas are sort of end users of water. And so the water is being used in completely different ways. So yes, agriculture uses more water, but it's at the sort of start of an entire process that goes from the farm through, different processors, and then winds up in the city. And so people in the city may use drinking water or toilet water or whatever at a certain level, but they're also getting the benefit of all of this other water use that isn't charged to them, even though they're the ones who are using it. You know, the water that went into making the milk, or the water that goes into, you know, the processed products that they use. So it's kind of an apples and oranges situation. And this is even larger issue, and it makes it extremely complicated, like lots of water issues are. In there have been studies done by the Bureau of Reclamation and others in the Albuquerque area to look at the impact of drawing down the aquifer from pumping for city use, and what it's done to the river, which basically means that the water's been drawn down so low underneath the river that the river's losing water to the aquifer instead of picking up water from the mountains and the mesa as it goes through the city. But irrigated agriculture in that area provides a huge amount, 60 or 70 or more thousand acre feet a year of recharge to the aquifer.
Where are they getting their water?
Well, the water, it's irrigated water. It comes out of the river through the Middle Rio Grande Conservancy District, and it goes to alfalfa and other things. And so it sits out on the fields, although, like Brian said, most of those fields by now have been leveled. The Conservancy District has made a big deal about leveling fields and stuff.
You mean so that the water doesn't run off into other places?
So quickly, so that you need more to...
So
it's actually a good thing that the water ponds on a field instead of running off, because you get more to the crops, but you also get more recharge. So if you took away that agricultural use, then you wouldn't be getting the recharge that you're getting now, and the impact to the aquifer from the city's pumping would be even worse than
Very
it is now.
Yeah, that's
so
complex.
Yes, they use a lot, but they also give back a lot.
Yeah.
The city uses a lot, and not so much of it goes back. They're overpumping the aquifer. The agriculture is recharging the aquifer.
Well, you know, another issue, really, in terms of the way we lose water is, you know, in the big cities like in Albuquerque, where you have these huge, big drainage canals that are designed specifically to move the water out of the city as quickly as possible. Down to the river and then shoot it on down. So that water doesn't get recharged, and that adds to the fact that we do lose water here. I mean, ultimately, there's only so much water in the world, and, you know, we reach some kind of equilibrium. But the question is, where is it, you know? And so the way to keep it here in the state is really by developing our really healthy headwater streams and headwaters, so that the water doesn't just run off because of there's been too much either mining or timber harvesting or things that harden the surface that move the water out, and so create more wetlands and things at the headwaters. That'll percolate on down later on in the season. Will maintain water where it's falling, and that's the critical part. So even in Albuquerque, for instance, when it rains, if we can figure out ways that we can reduce the impermeable layers, you know, and create more ways to get that water to go into our aquifers, to stay where it's falling, the better off we'll be.
Right. The other thing that those big channels do that... you know, collect stormwater from all over, you know, Albuquerque, for example, is that they collect a huge amount of chemicals and other things that run off of industrial sites or the result of maybe illegal dumping or whatever. So
you've parking got lots even.
Parking lots, yeah.
So you've got rainwater and snow, but particularly rainwater, raining on a city, raining on an area. That water runs into these canals, and those canals run into the river, and
right.
So everything in the flow goes
to the
into
river.
The river.
Yeah, and especially on the east side of Albuquerque, there's one channel, the North Diversion Channel, which drains almost the entire eastern part of Albuquerque. And so that channel, you can see it on I-25, on the east side of I-25. It actually runs north, or sort of runs in the wrong direction. And then it turns and it dumps water into the river a couple miles up above the diversion point for the drinking water project. And the Environment Department's Department of Energy Oversight Bureau, which is an entity inside the Environment Department that looks at LANL and Sandia Labs in particular, and WIP, decided because of concerns down in Albuquerque and in Santa Fe about the impact of these contaminants coming from LANL, they looked at the impact of stormwater runoff from Los Alamos and then also in Albuquerque. And so they sampled the river above these diversion points for the Buckman and for the Albuquerque drinking water diversion. And they found PCBs in Santa Fe up above and other things up above the Buckman diversion. But what just completely blew them away and everybody else was that they found these huge, huge amounts of PCBs in Albuquerque coming from the North Diversion Channel. where are they coming from? Nobody knows where they're coming
Nobody
from.
Nobody knows where they're coming
no,
from.
No, because it drains such a huge area that, you know, without doing an incredibly large amount of sampling at points farther and farther along the system and all the sub-channels that feed into the North Diversion Channel to sort of narrow it down, you're not ever going to really know. I mean, there are some suspicions. There are some industrial facilities along the North Diversion Channel that would have used or still are using PCBs maybe, or would have been using PCBs. But where they're coming from, nobody really knows. And so the best thing that you can do now is just try to keep them from getting into the river.
How do you do that?
Well, that's a problem for all of these things that are called non-point sources of pollution. You know, point sources are, you know, pipes that come from wastewater treatment
plants
or, you know, industrial facilities that have their own designated, you know, waste pipes, and they have to get a permit and they're regulated. Non-point sources are, you know, agricultural runoff and urban runoff, all those kinds of things. And, or even, you know, the runoff from Los Alamos National Lab. And you have to implement what are called best management practices. And those are either, management practices, like internal operating procedures and things like that, or physical structures that are meant to limit the amount of stuff that gets into the stormwater or into the runoff or captures it somehow. So in Albuquerque...
Can you capture PCBs?
Yes. What you do with them after you capture them is a whole other issue. But
you know, you put them in your compost pile?
No. But yes, you can. And this is very interesting because after the DOE Oversight Bureau found out, you know, all these things coming out of the North Diversion Channel, Bernalillo County Public Works went and looked at four other stormwater outfalls in the county, so outside of the Albuquerque City area within Bernalillo County. And they found PCBs at all four of those sites, too. And that's all they were looking for, just PCBs. So who knows what else was in it. But they were just really curious to see if there were PCBs. But at one of those sites, they had already installed some best management practices. And one of those is called a sediment drop. And the water comes in, it collects water from a residential areas in the neighborhood. It's in the southwest part of Albuquerque or the county. And so the water comes in and it drops down into a facility. It slows down, the sediment falls out to some extent, and then the water moves on. And then that water that moves on farther down goes through a constructed wetlands, which also further slows down the water. And sediment falls out there too, and then the water hits the river. And so there was a really significant drop in the amount of PCBs from where the water came in to this first sediment drop to where it went into the river. So those BMPs, those best management practices, were working.
The wonders of wetlands. Mm-hmm. There's yeah, not absolutely. Enough good that you can say about, right. about wetlands, right. constructed yeah. or natural.
And right. so they're now looking, they've got a contract or a grant to go hire some experts to look at other best management practices that could be used and then implement the preferred one of those to see how well that might work too on one of these other areas. So there are things that you can do, but then you've got all the sediment that's full of PCBs. So then it goes to a landfill right now. That's the only thing you can do with it.
We're talking to Michael Jensen and Brian Shields from Amigos Bravos. So we are talking about water quality, water quantity, and all these toxins that go into the river. So you've got these PCBs and everything else going into the Rio Grande. What happens then? I mean, what happens, for example, when water is drained off and irrigates fields? Do those chemicals go into the drinking water of cows and then into the milk? Do they go into the spinach? Do they go into the chilies? Are we eating them? Are we drinking them? What's going on?
That's a good question. I mean, I think in terms of at least with the dairy industry, I'm sure that they all use groundwater is what they're using. Right. They're probably polluting their own groundwater, and which they're using for the cows. In terms of whatever ends up in the river, yes, it is. It does go out into the fields. The thing that we look at is what are the rivers impaired for, each specific river? And what we find is that actually a lot of these toxins, the worst toxins, over time do get diluted out. But we do have different sections that are impaired for different things. And so we have to be careful about how we do use that water.
I mean, is that river water going into our faucet?
The river, yes, it is. In Albuquerque, it's going into the faucet, and here in Santa Fe, it's about to start, I believe, going mm-hmm. into the faucet. It does get treated before it goes into the faucet, and I know, Michael, you've got some other information on that.
Yeah, I mean, in Albuquerque, the drinking water project, which uses San Juan Chama water, not native Rio Grande water, that water gets treated using ozone and activated carbon, and that process together is pretty good, and it gets rid of most things. And so the PCBs, for example, at least according to the monitoring reports that the city sends out every year to its customers, I mean, they're required to do that, show that those things fall out.
And so the only thing process. We have to then worry about is where the activated charcoal filters are ending up.
Right. I mean,
which is landfills.
Yeah. They have to go somewhere. And it's the same thing with, you know, sludge that's collected when a treatment facility wants to use recycled wastewater for, you know, irrigation or something like that. They have to find a way to get rid of all that sludge. I mean, they use basically a sediment drop in most of those treatment processes too, where the water comes in and it's putting these big ponds, you know, for briefly so that the sediment falls out, but then they collect all that and it has to go somewhere. So that it's an issue.
And I think, well, each municipality obviously has to deal with its own problems as they see them coming in into the system. And I think, for instance, in Albuquerque, some of the water quality monitoring that Amigos Bravos did, and Michael really headed that effort up, found a number of what are called emerging pollutants that we were looking for specifically that are, at the moment there's no water quality standards for, but we're aware that they're out there. And things like pharmaceuticals and personal care products and things like that, that really EPA, and certainly not the state and not even the federal government, has developed standards for. So an awareness of what is coming into the system is going to eventually affect, to what level the water is treated once more standards are developed. And I think that due to the work that Amigos Bravos did there, the municipality, at least in Albuquerque, is much more aware of what they need to at least be looking for
Yeah, I mean, they told us specifically at a meeting where they announced that they were going to start doing water quality monitoring for pharmaceuticals and personal care products, that the person in charge of that project came up to me after the press conference and said, you know, we're doing this because of you guys.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if he was happy about having to do it, but... But it was, he was at least kind enough to, off the record, to give us credit for it.
And it's on the record now, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah,
so,
amigos, bravos. But so we've got not too much time left, so I want to really make sure we get to all the important things. I mean, water quantity, as we've talked about, is an issue. Water quality, one of the other big threats is the demise of regulation, which is really sought by the Martinez administration. They want to get rid of water quality and indeed all kinds of environmental regulation. What would that look like? What would that mean for the quality and quantity of our water in New Mexico?
Yeah,
that's wow, a good question.
That's the big question. I mean, at the moment, what we've heard from the Environment Department, we've met with the head of the Environment Department, Dave Martin, the secretary, and also with the deputy secretary, Raj Solomon, and also with the general counsel. What they're, at least the message that we're getting is from Secretary Martin is, you know, we want to listen to everybody's opinion, and you know, we want to make sure we work with everybody. What we're hearing from Mr. Solomon is, you know, we're not going to be enforcing anything at the moment because we don't know where we stand on these issues. So, for instance, on the dairy rules that we've been talking a lot about. They are not clear that they're going to defend those dairy rules, which are now under attack in the Court of Appeals, in the New Mexico Court of Appeals, under attack from the dairy industry. They're not sure, the Environment Department isn't sure whether they're going to defend those rules, which are really the rules of the public. I mean, they're the safeguards of public health.
They're the law of the land.
They're the law of the land.
They're
the ones responsible. Exactly.
Responsible for enforcing it.
Exactly. And they're not sure that they're going to defend them in court. Amigos Bravos has entered into the proceedings, both in the dairy industry challenge as well as in the challenge from the cattle industry in terms of the outstanding natural resource waters that are also being challenged, these new rules, and in terms of the greenhouse gas rules, the limits on greenhouse gas emissions. We've also entered a petition to intervene in that so that at least the public is at the table there. And all we can really hope for is that we can hold back this push, this train to do away with the safeguards, that we can hold on for as long as it takes before we get a new administration in there who's really concerned about protecting human health over the interests of business, of jobs, which, of course, obviously they're really important. But human health, if you don't have human health, what do you have? So.
And also, I would really like to see the calculations and the proof that when you do away with environmental regulations, there are more good jobs. I'm not sure that I believe that.
No, it's not there. It's not there. It's all manufactured. I mean, right now, the oil and gas industry is pleading that they've lost all these jobs because of the Pitt rule. It's totally ridiculous, and it doesn't add up.
It doesn't. If you, I've gone and looked at the data, and you can see oil production, gas production has been pretty flat for a really long time in New Mexico, but oil production was rising just before the Pitt rule went into effect. And it continued to rise after the Pitt rule went into effect, and it didn't fall until we had the economic collapse here in the United States. And
which
then
had nothing to do with the pit rule.
No. Well, no, because that collapse happened, you know, in every oil-producing state in the country. So unless New Mexico's pit rule had a really pernicious, you know, collateral effect on the industry.
Which it didn't, right.
Yeah. You know, so it didn't happen. And now oil production, the last time I looked, is pretty much back up to the level it was at, you know, when the pit rule went into effect because the economy's recovering. So the pit rule had nothing to do with that at all. In fact, not only does the data show that production kept on going after that, there are already companies in New Mexico who were implementing practices for their pits that went far beyond the pit rule. They had completely closed systems. With, you know, the pit rule is just a compromise between going to a closed system and the previous system of, you know, very little regulation of what went on in the pits. And so it's clear that the industry is capable of doing much more than the actual pit rule required. But they just, it seems to me that industry in New Mexico is just hell-bent on, you know, having nobody mess with them.
As a matter of principle rather than as a matter of practicality.
Because you can see, for example, in the Small Business Task Force, from what we know that you know Tracy Dingman at Clearly New Mexico has been able to find, because it's not public, the, you know, Martinez, who campaigned on, you know, opening up the government to the people and not being arbitrary, you know, using executive orders for everything, has operated with a lot of executive orders. She, you know, the Small Business Task Force, their first decision was to make every regulation, environmental regulation in New Mexico, no more stringent than federal regulation. There's no indication that they did any analysis to show that being more stringent than the federal regulation has, you know, a significantly higher cost to industry. That it's just the industry doesn't want it, so that became the decision, because that's what they want.
There's one area that we haven't talked about yet, and that is the threat to water quality from hydraulic fracturing, which is a way of extracting natural gas if the production of natural gas goes up, moves into other parts of the state.
Yeah, that's true. We haven't talked about that. This is one, a little bit of a bright light in Secretary Martin, what he has said in the hearing, his confirmation hearings in the legislature. He said that he was open to releasing the documents that showed what the fracking fluids are, which is a big deal. So, I mean, Secretary Martin was involved in developing a lot of the recovery methods for oil and gas. He knows the industry really well. If he's willing to be totally open about that, that's a hopeful sign. At least that we'll know what's going in. Now, how we deal with fracking is a different matter, because obviously he's done a lot of work on it and feels that it's fine. So how we deal with the impacts from fracking is going to be very problematic. I mean, I think with any kind of these extractive industries, what you have is so much externalized cost, as we were talking earlier. You know, we mentioned how, you know, these costs, for instance, fracking has a whole bunch of costs that are not, you know, include water contamination for, you know, people that are really depend on that water for drinking and things like that, that then they have to clean up. But when you look at these externalized costs, and we look at things like the mining industry, like the Molycorp mine, which is now up for, it's under cleanup for Superfund, under Superfund, they're going to be having to do a cleanup there that's going to run anywhere from $400 million to almost $1 billion in cleanup there. Luckily, that's owned by Chevron, so they got the money. But what about if it was a small mining company that didn't have the money? How would we be able to get paid for that? actually would come out of the taxpayers' money.
And so,
it would
so
come
often
out of
has
UN.
Done has that's
and
exactly
that's
what's
what,
happened.
That's exactly what happens, and that's so we really financial assurance is a big issue for us. Always has been how we make sure that the polluter, the person that's handling hazardous waste, puts aside the money in order to be able to pay for any kind of cleanup. And that's something that we continue to look at both at the federal level and at the state level. We're going to be looking at legislation in the next legislative session to maybe tighten up some of the financial assurance requirements. We've got a lawsuit against EPA for tightening up and creating rules for financial assurance for anybody that handles or transports hazardous waste right now. So I think that goes a long way, because if we can stop the pollution from happening at the front end by requiring financial assurance, industry isn't going to take as many risks. They're going to look after making sure that they do their operations in a way that doesn't impact water quality so much. And that's how we're really going to be able to deal with things like fracking, you know.
Brian Shields is executive director of Amigos Bravos. Michael Jensen, also with that fine organization, which can be found on the web at amigosbravos.org. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. So much more to talk about, but we'll just do it next time around.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to .foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.